Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the business stories right after this. And let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, they're banned from our public institutions, and they're banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching these ten planks of the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 or 75 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? Now, that's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers practiced and they advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. That is not separation of church and state. Now, there's at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments and all, 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that we receive for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what the penalty to the law is in order to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, Karma, or something else, it's automatic, and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, for more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, it's the place to start, doesn't cost you anything. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto our archives page, and you can download that free General Law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. All right, for the last few days, we've been talking about this thing of business models, business stories. Some of them for the purposes of helping us straighten out some of our business practices that have been causing us a lot of grief. And a lot of times people will say, you know, this Bible thing, this God thing, this common law portion of the program here, it's a downer. It's always negative. It never has any good news. It never has any remedies or solutions to it. Well, I tell my students, I disagree. I think that there are all kinds of remedies and solutions that are advanced by our Creator himself. Yeah, it's true. He's got a lot in there that says, you know, if you guys don't straighten up, here's what I'm going to do to you. But there's a lot in Scripture that gives us positive advice. For instance, in Revelation 18, verse 4, he tells us this. He said, "And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, and that you receive not of her plagues." That's a pretty positive statement. I don't think that we're going to change the United States of America and 300 million people. I don't believe it for a minute. But that doesn't preclude you personally from coming out from among them so that you're not mowed down with the rest of the transgressors. It's kind of like old dad's got five kids, and he said, hey, all of you go out and do this work. One of them did the work, the other four didn't. And he says, hey, you that's innocent, you did your work, separate yourself from the rest because I'm going to lower the boom on them. I think that's pretty positive. I took that as a positive piece of information that says, hey, listen, straighten up, clean up your act, and I'll let you off the hook. But if you don't, I'm going to nail you with everybody else. I think that that's positive. There's a second one here in 2 Chronicles 7, verse 14. Let me flip over here to 2 Chronicles chapter 7. And there's a positive statement in here that deals with people, you know, that are confronted with a problem like, hey, we're about to get mowed down. Where he says, if my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and I will heal their land. Now notice he says, I want you to turn from your sin, turn from their sin. Well, what are you going to turn from? Well, the answer is sin is the transgression of the law. Now, before we can turn from our sin, don't you think maybe we need to identify, well, what is it that we need to turn from? What is it that we're doing? What's the problem? What is this guy bitching about? And the answer to that is he's bitching about breach of contract. We have a business deal with the creator of the universe, and we are in breach of that contract. The contract and the terms are spelled out with precise terms in Exodus 19, verse 16 through Exodus 24, 8. You can read them just like I did. Turn to Exodus chapter 19, verse 16. Read it straight on through Exodus 24. That's chapter 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, those six chapters. It ends in verse 8. And in verse 7 and 8, our great-great-granddaddies closed the deal. God asked them the closing questions, and they said, yes, all that the Eternal has said, we will do and be obedient, and bound that upon the heirs and the signs forever. Now we, that's you and me, here in the 21st century, have turned away from the terms and conditions of our agreement, our contract. We haven't fulfilled those terms and agreements. And so now the penalty clause is coming into play. And what we've seen so far is, you know, we've lost our industry. That's been shipped overseas. We've lost 8 million jobs, and that's tough. Now we're in a recession, and that's even worse. And now we're faced with economic collapse. That's going to be even worse. Then we're faced with war, national captivity, and that's the final axe to fall upon us. So my conclusion is I think we should identify the problem, and then I think we should take positive action on the part of our individual selves and our families if they're so inclined. I'm not suggesting that I'm going to force my wife or my children, you know, to follow in my footsteps. I suggest that they might want to reconsider. And some of them have said, no way, Jose. And I said, well, okay, it's your choice in life. Make it. That's what life is. It's filled with choices. Now, let me tell you a little story here about how do you approach somebody and get a positive response from them when you've got a business deal that's unraveling. And the answer to that, I think, lies with a story that we find in Matthew chapter 18, verses 23 through 35. You flip over here to Matthew chapter 18. It's a story about two debtors. And the one debtor, this is debtor number one, he comes to God and he says, you know, I've got this debt with you, and I'd like you to forgive it and let me off the hook. He starts off by saying, therefore is the kingdom of heaven likened unto a certain king which would take account of his servants. And when he had begun to reckon, one was brought unto him which owed him 10,000 talents. But forasmuch as he had not to pay, his Lord commanded him to be sold, and his wife and children, and all that he had, and payment to be made. But the servant therefore fell down, and he worshipped him, and he said, Lord, have patience with me, and I will pay thee all. Now, when the Lord of that servant was moved with compassion, and he loosed him and forgave him all of the debt. But the same servant went out and found one of his fellow servants, which owed him 100 pence. So he laid hands on him, and he took him by the throat, saying, you pay me that which you owe me. And his fellow servant fell down at his feet, and he besought him, saying, well, have patience with me, and I will pay thee all. But he would not. But he went and he cast him into prison until he should pay the debt. Now when his fellow servants saw what was done, they were very sorry, and they came and told unto their lord all that was done. And then his lord, after he had called him, and said unto him, O thou wicked servant, I forgave you all of that debt because you desired it of me. Should not you also have had compassion on your fellow servant, even as I had pity on you? And his lord was very wroth, and he delivered him to the tormentors until he should pay all that was due him. And so likewise shall my heavenly Father do also unto you, if you, from your hearts, forgive not every one his brother their trespasses. Now, this is an important issue. You and I are in breach of contract. You know, the bankers out here will not forgive so much as the debt that a man owes on his house, even though it's coming up to the year of release and the Jubilee. Now, we ought to forgive one another these debts. This guy wouldn't forgive the debt, and so, in the final analysis, the king comes back and says, well, okay, if that's the way you want it, let's pay you like you paid him. Now, I had a guy here one time. He was a laser physicist. A laser physicist, pretty unusual fellow. And he worked at he was employed by the University of California at Livermore, California. And so he was rented or sold or bartered to Alamogordo, New Mexico. I'm not quite sure what the deal was. But he got paid by Lawrence Radiation Lab in Livermore, but he was actually working as a laser physicist at Alamogordo, New Mexico. Well, he came here to school because he had a business problem, and it was pretty serious to him. You see, he bought a house, and then he got behind on the payments, and he was unable to fulfill the mortgage obligations, couldn't make his payments. Now, you might say, well, you know, that's life. Well, for a nuclear physicist, this is a laser physicist in this case, that's pretty serious because, you see, if you default on a note, well, then you'll lose your security clearance, and without your security clearance, you can't work. Now, this guy wasn't making a ton of money anyway, although at the time, this is probably 1990, he was making about $80,000 a year, which I thought was about $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 a year low on my estimation. Now, I told you about the engraver here, but, you know, he was a pretty rare breed too, but he's probably making a quarter of a million a year, maybe even as much as a half. And I asked this guy, I said, how many laser physicists are there in the world? And he said, 30. 30. This guy belongs to a club of 30. That's pretty impressive, I thought. Now, I would think that the United States of America would want to take care of one of those very rare nuclear physicists. In fact, to show you how rare this guy is, he came here, and I suspect his supervisors probably sent him here to the law school for the express purpose of solving this business problem over the mortgage on his house. He didn't know how to do it. He didn't know what he was going to do. He was afraid that he was going to lose his security clearance, and I'm sure that his bosses were kind of concerned about it, too. It wasn't that big a deal, as it turned out, and I'll show you how that worked out here in a second. But while he was here, he came in a motorhome, and he was here with a bodyguard, and every 4 hours, six times a day, he had to call in to whoever his handler was, wherever this guy was. And at the time that he was here, we didn't have cell towers here. This guy had a special phone that worked off of satellites. And when this satellite would go over, or one of them, he'd have to be at a certain location up on top of the hill where they stayed with the motorhome, and they would call in. And his bodyguard came to class here with him every day. He was the only guy in class. A special school just set up for him, and they were willing to pay the money to do that. And I thought, well, this is really unusual, so I took notes of it. Now, here's what his solution was. I said, you owe this guy the money, and there's no two ways about it. So either one, you got to borrow the money and pay it off, or two, you've got to go to the creditor and beseech him and see if he will modify the terms and conditions so that you can meet these new terms and conditions that you want to propose. Now, this guy didn't want to beat anybody out of his money. He just got to the point where, because of market conditions, he was trying to renovate a house, and he had underestimated the amount of time, effort, and energy and money that went into it. And so he was behind the eight ball, and so he went back to, it was in Alamogordo, New Mexico, and he said, okay, here's my problem. Went to the creditor, and he said, here's my problem. I can't pay you. It isn't that I don't want to. It's that I can't. But here's what I can do. Here's what I would like to propose. And if you will accept this proposal and modify this original contract over here, give me more time and I will pay thee all that I owe. And guess what? His creditor said, well, of course I will forgive you. I'm not going to forgive you the whole debt. I'm just going to forgive you for not performing on the terms and conditions of the contract, and we're going to renegotiate it. You tell me what it is you want to do, and I'll go along with it. So they proposed a new deal, and they worked out a new payment schedule, and the guy went on with his life and lived his life happily ever after. So there's an example of Matthew 18, verses 23 through 35, the parable of the two debtors, coming to fruition. Now, this God that we're talking about, he is a kind of an odd duck. He's a peculiar fellow. In fact, in the scripture, he uses the word peculiar quite often in referring to people that practice this law. He says they are a peculiar people. He says they are a peculiar people unto me. Well, if we are peculiar unto him, well, then he must be pretty peculiar to everybody else in the world. He calls us a peculiar treasure. Now, in the process of doing this, he has quite a bit of information here that I think is very positive, very straightforward, to give us some instruction as to how do we solve this breach of contract that we have with our Creator. Because it's a pretty serious breach. The breach is so serious that we face total destruction and national captivity. That's as bad as it can get. But he goes on to say, I'm not going to do this to everybody. I'm only going to do it to people that give me the finger. So I would like to suggest that we consider stop giving this guy the finger. It's counterproductive. Doesn't make him feel good. It ain't going to make you feel any better. And we might be able to ameliorate some of the hurt feelings here. Watch this. In Matthew 4, verse 4, here's what God gives us the instruction. He says, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. We might start by listening to every word that proceeds out of his mouth. That would mean reevaluating the Old Testament, the Old Covenant, the contract, which our pulpit parrots have been telling us is a lie, it's done away with, you can't depend upon it, it's false, it's full of errors, don't listen. Just pay attention to the New Testament, but don't pay attention to the Old. Let me point out to you that when Jesus, who made this statement in Matthew 4:4, made that statement, not a word of the New Testament had been written yet. So when he said man doesn't live by bread alone, the only reference he was making was the 39 books of the Old Testament. That includes Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. That includes our contract in Exodus 19:16 through Exodus 24:8. I would suggest that we get back to practicing our contract. Now, in Revelation 3, verses 7 through 13, he has a very positive statement in here for people. In Revelation 3, he says, I'm not going to do this to everybody. Listen to this. He said, and to the angel of the church of Philadelphia write these things, says he that is holy and he that's true, he that has the key of David, he that opens and no man shuts, and shuts and no man opens. I know your works, and behold, I have set before you an open door. No man can shut it, because you have a little strength, and you've kept my word, and you have not denied my name. Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before your feet and to know that I have loved you. Because you have kept the word of my patience, I also will keep you from the hour of temptation, which shall come upon all the world to try them that dwell upon the earth. Behold, I come quickly. Hold that fast which you have, that no man takes your crown. And he that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go out no more. And I will write upon him the name of my God, and the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem, which comes down from heaven. And I will write upon him my new name. Now he that has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says unto the churches. Verse 10 is the key, the pivotal scripture here. It says, because you have kept the word of my patience. That word patience is a code word for commandments. Because you have kept my commandments, I also will keep you from the great tribulation. I think that's pretty positive. Pretty positive. Now, our contract doesn't call for payment in money. It calls for payment in reciprocity. Reciprocity means you scratch my back and I scratch yours. The deal was, you obey me and keep my commandments, and I will give you these 33 benefits. Now, these 33 benefits are pretty neat. They're physical. It's a business transaction. And it doesn't have anything to do with religion. You don't have to give your heart to Jesus. You don't have to come down the sawdust trail. You don't have to get embarrassed. Nobody has to know what the hell you're doing. But it does require specific performance on the terms of the contract. Now, I understand you didn't make the terms and conditions. You probably don't even know what they are. Couldn't find them at high noon with both hands and a roadmap, but they're still binding upon you because you're one of the heirs and assigns forever. Forever isn't up yet. The heirs and assigns are all of the Israelites. We're scattered all over the world. We're a very dominant people. We're the white Anglo-Saxons. There's 12 tribes of us, and you'll find us in northwestern Europe. You'll find us in the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Iceland, Greenland. We're scattered around throughout the world. South Africa had a big bunch of us. I think most of us are about ready to leave there now if we haven't already. Rhodesia was another stronghold of white Anglo-Saxons. I think most of us are out of there by now. All right, now these are positive statements. Malachi 3, verse 8 is another business positive. Here's the creator of the universe, and he says, hey, you, come here. Let me tell you something. You're in breach of contract over here, and you ain't paying me what you owe me. But he asks, will a man rob God? And he says, yet you have robbed me. And you say, well, wherein have we robbed you? Well, you have robbed me in tithes and offerings, and you're cursed with a curse because you have robbed me, even this whole nation. So here in America, we got 300 million robbers here. Well, you know, not exactly all of us. Some of us do tithe. Some of us don't pay the income tax. But by and large, the majority of Americans prefer the income tax to tithing. And that's a choice that they need to make. And for the most part, they have made it. Now that you've made it and your industry has been exported, 8 million jobs have been lost, your economy is in shambles, you're facing economic collapse and national captivity, could it be that maybe, just maybe, we ought to go back, talk to the boss, and say, you know, we made a mistake here, we're in breach of contract, would you help me perform on the contract without killing me? You know, just a thought for you to think about. Now, like I said, I don't think I can save all the people in California, but there might be 10 or 15 people in California that might wake up to reality and say, hey, listen, maybe I ought to quit paying the franchise tax board. Maybe I ought to start paying God what I owe him. But like I said, it's a choice for you to make, and you got to make the choice. And then when you make the choice, there'll be an outcome that comes from it. I hope you get the outcome that you're looking for. Now, the Messiah had a confrontation with a guy. It was in Matthew 19, verse 16. Let's flip over there to Matthew 19, 16. If you're following along, if you're not, you can write it down. Better yet, if you want, you can go back to our archives page when you get home. You're in your car right now. You can go to your computer. You can pull this program back up. And listen to this. A guy came to him one day, and behold, one came to him and said, good master, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? You might ask the same thing. Hey, what do I have to do to go to heaven? You know, or whatever you think the reward might be. And then he said to him, well, why do you call me good? There's none good but one, that is God. But if you will enter into life, keep the commandments. Did you notice here that Jesus didn't stutter? If you will enter into life, if you will succeed at whatever you believe the goal is, keep the commandments. Can you identify the commandments, boys and girls? Well, this young fella couldn't. He said, which? You know, I can hear you out there right now, as far away from me as you are in radio land. You're saying, yeah, well, which ones? All right, listen up, because he tells you right here. And then he said, which? And Jesus said, you shall do no murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness and honor your father and mother. And you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And the young man said to him, well, all of these things have I kept from my youth up. Now what lack I yet? And Jesus said to him, well, if you'll be perfect, then go and sell all that you have and give to the poor, and you shall have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me. Take all of your wealth. Take your position. Sell it all. Give it to the poor. Come follow me. I got a job for you. He was probably offering this guy a position as one of his 12 disciples. And the guy was saddened by it. And he said, well, I'm real sorry about that, but I'm not going to give up my position as the executive director of, or the manager or CEO of, or my position here with. And so he kept his job and went on about his business. No hard feelings, but you know, each one of those 12 apostles in the resurrection, first resurrection, are all going to be named as governors, kings, one each of the 12 tribes of Israel. To give you an illustration of what that would be, one of them is going to be named the governor of New York, another is going to be named the governor of Pennsylvania, the next is going to be the governor of California, and so on. I don't think Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to cut the mustard here. No, nice guy, but I just don't think that Arnie is the guy that has the kind of something that it takes. I don't think he's got the right stuff. All right, so there's the answer to your riddle, boys and girls. Now, if you want to know where the rest of the Ten Commandments are located, they're in Deuteronomy chapter 5 and Exodus chapter 20. Now, there's a little bit more that goes with it. Those Ten Commandments are the foundation. They are like our Constitution of the United States. They're the foundation of the legal system, and then there's some statutes and judgments and commandments that go along with them. Just like we have Article 1, Section 10, and then we have Title 31, Section 5103 through 5112. You know, monetary policy is conducted by statute. All right, so you got to put the rest of the story together, and when you do, there it is. It's really just a business problem that we have. I'm not talking about, you know, you got to give your heart to Jesus or get religion, you got to join this or that church. Hell, you can stay right there where you're at. Catholics can do this. You Catholics out there, you can obey God and keep His commandments, and so can you Mormons. To give you an illustration of this, there's a law here that says, you shall not practice Christmas. That's in Jeremiah 10, verses 1 through 6. Why don't you write that down, Christmas? And then stop doing that. You don't have to leave the Catholic Church and join the Mormons or anybody else to stop practicing Christmas. You can do it all by yourself. You don't have to persuade the Pope and the rest of the church to follow you. You just obey God and do what He tells you. Here's another one, pork. Hey, you Mormons out there, you can quit eating pig anytime you want, and you don't have to leave the Mormon church to do that. But keep in mind that God in Leviticus 11, verse 7, told you, don't eat pig. You can do that. You're probably not going to persuade the 12 apostles or the bishops in your church and the rest of the membership. You don't need to. They don't even need to know that you don't eat pig. You just stop quietly. Here's Easter in Jeremiah 44, verses 17 through 19. You can stop doing that. You can stop using these unjust weights and balances, you know, in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. You know, that's the gist of our business school. It's to show you how to get off of Federal Reserve notes and onto gold coin and start making money for a change instead of losing your shirt and paying a third of it over to the government every week. Hey, I got to pause right here and give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not state schools and all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, and click onto our archives page, and you can download it right there, georgegordon.org, on the archives page. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their opinions may not be totally approved or totally endorsed by the Law Hour either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Don't blame any of them. Just blame me. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about business stories. And one of the big untold stories concerning business is our breach of contract that we have with our Creator. Now, there's a story here in the Bible. I'm going to skip ahead here a little bit because there's a story here in Luke 11:37 through 54. And it has to do with religious people, in particular preachers. Preachers have been telling us that we don't have to practice the law of God. Listen to what Jesus had to say about you preachers out there. In Luke 11:37, he says, "And as he spoke, a certain Pharisee besought him to dine with him, and he went in and he sat down to meat." So he went down to sit down to dinner with this preacher, this religious guy. "And when the Pharisee saw it, he marveled that he had not first washed before dinner." Now, that tells you a lot about Jesus. Came in, didn't wash his hands before he sat down to eat. That ought to give a lot of hope to you 5- and 6-year-olds out there when Aunt Bessie insists that you wash your hands before you come in to eat. You can tell Aunt Bessie, well, Jesus didn't wash before he ate. And he was upbraided by the local clergy. "And then the Lord said unto him, Now, do you Pharisees make clean the outside of the cup and the platter, but your inward part is full of ravening and wickedness?" So he's looking at this preacher over here, you know, a Jerry Falwell, a Billy Graham, you know, an Oral Roberts. And he said to this religious guy, he said, "But your inward part is full of ravening and wickedness. You fools, did not he that made that which is without make that which is within also? But rather give alms of such things as you have, and behold, all things are clean unto you. But woe unto you Pharisees, you religious fools, for you tithe mint and rue and all manner of herbs and pass over judgment and the love of God." Now, do you know what the love of God is? You know, in 1 John 5, verse 3, it says, here's the definition of the love of God, for you preachers out there don't know. "For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not grievous." Now, preachers believe that these 10 commandments are absolutely grievous, and that's why they're telling you that you don't need to practice that. He says, "These ought you to have done, and not to have left the other undone. Woe unto you, Pharisees, because you love the uppermost seats in the synagogues and the greetings in the marketplace. Woe to you, scribes, you Pharisees, you hypocrites." He called them hypocrites. Now, we have about 330,000 of these Christian preacher hypocrites in the United States of America telling you that the Bible is false, telling you that the Bible is unreliable, that you can't believe it, and the Ten Commandments are abolished, nailed to the cross with Jesus taken out of the way, and you don't have to practice it. All right, you got a choice to make here. Now, you're in economic collapse. You're on the verge of national captivity. You have exported your industry. Well, most of it, 90% of your industry has been sent over to China. In fact, you didn't just give it away. You gave it away to your enemies. Enemies have it. Your economy is in shambles, and your God is telling you you're in breach of contract, and if you don't shape up, I'm going to lower the boom on you. And these clowns are telling you, don't listen to God. Well, okay, you know, you can go ahead and listen to Arlen Specter and Dianne Feinstein and Barack Obama and listen to your politicians and your preachers and see how far that gets you. At this point in time, I think all of us ought to take a good, long, hard look at our politicians and our preachers, our lawyers, our bureaucrats, our government officials. Where are we today, and who led us into this mess, this trap? Who led us here? He went on to say, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, because you are as graves, which appear not, and the men that walk over them are not aware of them. Then answered one of the lawyers and said to him, Well, master, thus saying, thou reproachest us also? And he said, Woe unto you also, you lawyers, because you laid men with burdens grievous to be borne, and you yourselves touch not the burdens with one of your fingers." Well, can you figure out who these lawyers are that he just said, "Hey, you laid men with grievous burdens"? Have you been looking at your Congress and your legislature that has laid upon you these grievous burdens like OSHA, Social Security, the EPA, socialized medicine, the Franchise Tax Board, and all of the myriad regulations that have come down? You people down there in Louisiana, did you make your application to the government so that you could get your permits, so that you could clean up the oil in the ocean? And you haven't even got your permits, for crying out loud, while the oil comes in and destroys your fisheries? Huh? These are the lawyers that have bound you with grievous burdens that they themselves wouldn't lift their finger to help you with. That's right, your politicians. And listen, they conveniently exempted themselves from OSHA. Congress is not bound by OSHA. Congress is not bound by Social Security. Congress is not bound by the Environmental Protection Agency. Congress is not part of the new socialized medicine program. Congress has their own retirement program, their own medical benefits. That's right. They bind these grievous burdens upon you, but they wouldn't lift so much as their little finger to aid you while your fisheries are being destroyed in Louisiana. God, what a prophecy. He goes on to say, he says, woe unto you, lawyers, for you build the sepulchers of the prophets and your fathers killed them. Truly you bear witness that you allow the deeds of your fathers, because they indeed killed them and you built their sepulchers. Therefore also said the wisdom of God, I will send them prophets and apostles, and some of them they shall slay and persecute. That the blood of all of the prophets which was shed from the foundation of the world may be required of this generation. Now, I mentioned when I started this dialogue here, I said, hey, wait a minute. We got a breach of contract over here, and there's payday coming. The Great Tribulation, spoken of in some 30 prophecies in the Scripture, primarily in Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, Revelation 6, Revelation 18, is aimed at this period of time called the Great Tribulation, Jacob's trouble. Payday, boys and girls, is right around the corner. That's the bad news. Here's the good news. The good news is the boss comes along and says, now listen, wake up, smell the coffee, feed the dog, make the bed, mow the grass, shut up, sit down, fold your hands, and do what you're told. And in Revelation 3, he said, hey, listen, I will keep you from this great tribulation. I can't think of better news than that. That's what my daddy told me. He said, you know, you do your work, you get your allowance, you get your movie money, we go hunting. You don't, you get whipped, and you don't get your allowance, and you don't get your movie money. That's all we're dealing with there. This isn't some big mystery that you have to go to law school at Harvard or someplace, or go to the MBA school at Yale and get a master's degree in business administration. We got a business problem here. And our business problem with our Creator is breach of contract. Nothing more, nothing less. And, you know, anybody would tell you, business is business and BS is BS. Perform, everything's honky-dory. If you don't perform, then foreclosure is in your future. And this great tribulation is going to be one whale of a foreclosure. All right, now with that one out of the way, there's a solution to this problem, even nationally, that is outlined here in Genesis chapter 18. Let me flip over here. If you've got a Bible, flip over here with me, Genesis chapter 18. In Deuteronomy 7, verses 9 through 11, he makes a statement about verse 9, and he says, I will keep my word. I will perform on my agreement to 1,000 generations. He says that in Deuteronomy 7, verse 9. I think that's pretty valuable. When a guy comes to you and he says, hey, listen, now we've got a deal, and I'm here to tell you that I'm going to fulfill my end of the deal to 1,000 generations. That's a long time. That's 40,000 years. I mean, the world's only been here for about less than 100 generations. If you take 6,000 years, divide that by 40, we're only talking about 150 generations so far. He says, I'll do this to 1,000 generations. That's pretty important. Now, he's got a little deal over here that comes down in Genesis chapter 18. It was over Sodom and Gomorrah. And I looked at this and I said, you know, this is a business problem that we have, but it could be solved by a little known quirk of law here. Listen to this. How would you like to bind God Almighty, the creator of the universe, to specific performance, huh? I mean, how would you like to come out and say, hey, wake up here, God. You made the rules, and you're bound by your own law. And it is a fact, he is. This guy is unique because unlike other ordinary gods, he is bound by his own law. That's why he likes limited government, because you get too much law, you get too much limitation on your actions. Listen to this story over here. We're talking about Sodom and Gomorrah over here in chapter 18. And about verse 20. And the Eternal said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great and because their sin is very grievous, I'm going to go down there now. And I'm going to see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it which is come unto me, and if not, then I'll know. Now, here's God talking to Abraham, and he says, Abraham asked him, says, hey, where are you going? He says, I'm going over to Sodom and Gomorrah. What are we going to do over there? I'm going to nuke them. Now, Abraham is probably pretty concerned about Sodom and Gomorrah because he's got his nephew Lot lives over there. It's only about 35 miles away from where he's living, 65 miles from Jerusalem, and a hell of a long ways away. And so Abraham, now get this, Abraham has 318 servants, if you extrapolate that out, and you put 100 cows on each one of them, he probably has around 31,000 head of cattle, not to mention the sheep he's got, and he owns all the land that goes with it, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of, You know, if you had 31,000 head of cattle, bare minimum, he's got times 3 acres. He got 93,000 acres divided by 640. Well, he's got about 145 sections. My guess is he's probably got more than that, but 145 square miles is a pretty good piece of real estate, wouldn't you say? He's in the cattle business. And more than likely, being 35 miles from a population center of 100,000 people, he probably has a couple of Stuart Anderson restaurants, probably has some office buildings, apartment houses. You know, people that are in the business world invest, you know, in the local economy. I mean, I did. And I used to have apartment houses and contracting companies. And I imagine if he's in the cattle business, he might even run a slaughterhouse or something on that order. Abraham is worth about $175 million as this conversation is coming down, just based upon the number of cattle that he's got and the amount of land that he's got and, you know, 318 guys working for him. I'll just about tell you the size and scope of his business, $175 million, bottom line. So Abraham is kind of surprised, and he drew near and he said, well, will you destroy the righteous with the wicked? Just in case there's 50 righteous within the city, are you going to destroy the whole city, including the 50 righteous that are in the city? And you know, that's a pretty good question. Are you going to destroy San Francisco? There might be 50 righteous there. And God said, no, I wouldn't do it for the sake of 50 righteous. Listen to his wording here. And he said, that be far from you to do after this manner, to slay the righteous with the wicked, and that the righteous should be as the wicked, that be far from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? And the Eternal said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I'll spare all the place for their sake. Now I looked at that and I said, now here's a deal that's pregnant with possibilities. It gets better, though. It gets better. You know, we might be able to find 50 in San Francisco, New Orleans, Philadelphia. But Abraham, crafty fellow that he was, said, peradventure there be 5 short, and maybe there's only 45. And God said, okay, I wouldn't destroy the place for 45. Abraham comes back, 40? Oh, no, I'll let it pass for 40. How about 35? No, I won't destroy it for 35. 30? I mean, it sounds like an auctioneer taking bids, you know. It went 50, 45, 45, 45. Do I hear 40, 40, 40? Do I hear 35? Do I hear 30, 30, 35, 30, 30, 30, 25, 25? He gets it all the way down to 10. He probably could have sold this deal for 5 if he'd put his mind to it, but I'm suspicious that he was watching the boss's body language. I used to do that. I'd watch my daddy's body language, and when my daddy got his hand in his pocket and got to flipping them silver dollars, you could hear how mad my dad was. I could tell by his body language, it's time to shut up. I think that's what happened to Abraham in this deal. He got down to 10, and he said, okay, sold 10. We're looking for 10 righteous in Sodom and Gomorrah. If we find them, we're not going to destroy the place for their sake. They go over and they start looking. Couldn't find 10. They only found 4, and Mrs. Lot flunked the test. So I guess they were down to 3. But here's the good news. The 3 righteous that were in Sodom and Gomorrah were spared. The 8 righteous before the flood were all spared in the ark. That's the good news. Hey, you want some good news out of this? Hey, listen, there it is. You can save yourself out of this mess. That's right. Barack Obama and the Congress can lead us into it, but they can't kill you. They threw Daniel in the lion's den and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace, but they couldn't kill him. They tried hard. They had mean intent. Couldn't get the job done. And that's because they were under 70, and if you're under 70 and you're practicing this law, you can't die. Now, there's only 2 people in the entirety of the history of the world that we have a record of that died before they were 70, John the Baptist and Jesus himself. Both of them were earmarked to die before they were 70. Nobody else has ever been killed before 70 practicing this law. Daniel wasn't 70, and neither were Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They couldn't get the job done. Now, that's the bright spot. Now, for old farts like me, it's bad news because I'm 70. My contract expired, and I'm what's known as a free agent. I'm on my own. That doesn't mean he wouldn't save me, but he doesn't have any legal obligation to do it. Now, that's pretty important. Here's the numbers. Let's suppose that in the United States today, there were 300,000 righteous men. Well, some women could go along with it. Then God would not destroy this place for the sake of the 300,000, assuming that there's 1 in 1,000 in Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, it could well be that Sodom and Gomorrah didn't have a population of 10,000, and that their population was more on the order of 100,000. Well, if there was 100,000 there, then we would need somewhere in the neighborhood of 30,000 people here in the United States. That would be 1 out of 30,000 instead of 1 out of 300,000. Now, when this issue came up with Elijah, Elijah said, I'm the last guy in Israel practicing this law. Big Mike said, oh, no. There's 7,000 more that haven't bowed their knee to Baal. I would bet that here in the United States, there's 7,000. Hell, there might be 70,000. But I don't know whether there's enough here to prevent the Great Tribulation from engulfing the entire nation. As a matter of fact, I kind of doubt it. I think we're going to be hard-pressed to find 30,000. 300,000 is a real tough nut to crack. 30,000 would be easier, but I'm suspicious. Now, you people up in Canada, hey, down in Australia, New Zealand, you think you got 7,000 righteous in the land? You think you've got enough reason down there to compel God to specific performance and prevent him from destroying your country? You could. You could because of stare decisis. We already have case precedent. Sodom and Gomorrah is that case precedent. Stare decisis. Once settled, always settled. And remember, Numbers chapter 30, what proceeds out of my mouth cannot return again. He made the deal to them. He would be unfair to us. In fact, the Messiah said, if the people of Sodom and Gomorrah had had the information, had had the warning that you people standing here listening to me today have had, they would repent in sackcloth and ashes. I mean, they'd have got real religious and repented. Now, I would suggest today, in the modern world, with the evidences available, now that we can see what's actually happening to us, what is actually unfolding, and then compare that with Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21, you ought to take a good, long, hard look at Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which in 1960 had 26 steel mills and today has zero, which had 1.1 million population in 1960 and now has 300,000. That city is in decline, as is Detroit and Philadelphia and a number of cities in the United States. Our industrial base has been decimated. We're already under siege. It's time to make a decision, isn't it? And that's the good news. The good news is we're in breach of contract, but the boss is willing to renegotiate the terms and conditions if you're willing to perform on the contract. Hey, I'm out of time. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. Let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, that's it. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.